on this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Mirroring, as we call it, you know, we started out with the name of the episode, is that we go through that catalog of movie moments from our history, and we find the one that is the best match for what the person in front of us is going through. And it's as if we are going through not actually their experience, but through a prior experience that was close to their experience.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Let's just briefly acquaint the audience on a bit of neuroscience behind empathy. Monkeys can have empathy. Brain scans done on, and I think it's actually chimpanzees, have shown that the same areas light up in the brains as light up in the human brains when they are picturing the experience of another chimpanzee. And so if you, for instance, cause discomfort in a chimpanzee's finger, there's a certain brain area that will light up in response to that discomfort. And if you do the same scan on a chimpanzee witnessing that discomfort, their same brain area will light up. So they're in some way forming a mental movie of the experience of another chimpanzee. And humans do the same thing. I'll be tragic and say, often use example of, if I took a fork, gouged it into my eyeball, carved it out of my head like a big freaking grape and started to eat my eyeball. Some of you are picturing this already. Sorry for the tragic nature of this. Then you would have a response, a revulsion response. And that's because you have created that experience in your mind as if it is happening to you. And all we're doing is encouraging you to practice that, minus the fork, with with the people that you care most about. Is really imagine this, and what the brain does through life is stores up a catalog of experiences. And that mirroring, as we call it, you know, we started out with the name of the episode about there, you know, kind of being a mirror in our brain. It really, really is that we go through that catalog of movie moments from our history, and we find the one that is the best match for what the person in front of us is going through. And it's as if we are going through not actually their experience, but through a prior experience that was close to their experience. And we're having those experiences simultaneously. And by the way, this is where re-experiencing for trauma comes in, is that we, of course, are we re-experiencing the trauma? No, you're not re-experiencing the trauma, because the trauma was way back then, but we are hitting the replay button. Now, if you want to call that re-experiencing, okay, but it's really replay. If I give you a piece of, one of my favorite pies, lemon meringue pie, lemon icebox pie, well, there's a good one, and I videotape you doing it, eating it, and then 10 years later, I play you the videotape. Well, you're watching it. You might even taste it in your mouth. You might even experience the texture of the meringue. And goodness, who doesn't love meringue? I guess there's some weird people that doesn't love meringue. I used to mix up meringue as a kid and just eat the freaking meringue.
But it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So you can taste it in your mouth. You can actually taste the texture of the meringue, but you have no meringue. You have no calories. That was a completely calorie-free experience. So it wasn't actually re-experiencing. It was a replay. Why? Because you had my meringue pie. Because you had that one in the past, but you had others and you're replaying it. We talked about the kind of overreaction of parents. How else might empathy have a dark side?
I mean, I see it a lot when, and I don't think if it's done properly, this is necessarily a bad thing, but I see it a lot when people show an overabundance of empathy to someone who's done something quite terrible. And they try to explain away what that person has done. So if they've, done something bad to a child or if they've killed someone and they're like, oh, well, you know, it was just their background. It was this horrible thing that happened to them. And it's like, yes, if I'm working with that person, I am going to try to have empathy. But if we overdo it and we start to take things out of context and all that kind of stuff, we could actually, unfortunately, encourage that kind of behavior instead of taking a step back and being like, yes, this is terrible what happened to that person in their past, but they still had, you know, they still made the decision that they made currently that was an unhealthy, unwise decision.
I agree.
Is that kind of, yeah.
I have a phrase, the ticket you bought. And we each ride the train of life based on the ticket we bought. And many things in life, the ticket can't be unbought. And you can't reverse the train ride. So if you've done something that is, well, horrible, I am sorry. You know, here's sympathy for the situation that you're currently in. And I really am. I don't enjoy seeing anybody suffering from anything. I'm not one that, you know, if they hurt me, let's make them suffer. I just, you know, I'd have a hard time sleeping at night. I'm not a vengeful person. But if you did something, then this is the price you pay. And if it's jail, price you pay. If it is accountability to a spouse and them, you know, having you on, and we don't have an affiliate agreement with Life 360, but having them on Life 360 and they can see your little pin drop wherever you go, hey, ticket you bought. If they want to look at your phone, hey, ticket you bought. And what's that called? That's called proof. There are things that happen that you pay for through measures that you don't particularly prefer, but that's a ticket you bought.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the ethical principles of psychologists and code of conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the Art Lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
I often get the question about sleep. I can't sleep. I try to go to sleep. I can't initiate sleep. I go to sleep and I don't stay asleep. And then I start asking questions about what we call sleep hygiene. What is your sleep regimen like? What time do you go to bed? How do you prepare yourself for bed? What do you do while you're in bed? And one of the greatest offenders I find is bathing the brain in blue light. Here's a good way to think of it. Look outside during the daytime and tell me what color the sky is. Oh, wow, it may be blue, you might see, if it's a nice day. Well, guess what color of light comes from your phones? Blue light. Now, the brain is heavily associated with being awake when the sky is blue. Why would you bathe your brain in the light that triggers your brain to be awake when you're trying to go to sleep? Do your brain a favor. Be brain friendly when it comes to sleep. Put up these devices that we call smartphones because they actually will do the opposite to you. Your brain during testing can actually drop a couple of IQ points just because of lack of sleep hygiene. Put away the blue light. It's only for the blue sky, and get a better night's sleep. Put your phone across the room. Put it in a drawer. Make it hard to get to. Way back before there were phones, people slept just fine without them. You can train your brain to sleep just fine without them too. Turn off the TV screens. Turn off the laptops. Turn off the smart pads. The only thing that sleep is for, well, there's really two things, but we'll talk about one of them. We'll leave one of them a secret, is sleep. Stop trying to do homework in bed, watch your favorite Netflix shows in bed, watch the next episode of your favorite TV show, and just program your brain to associate bed with sleep, and you'll find yourself counting sheep in no time.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab. Bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball Team.
I think the other thing Sarah's talking about, that saying the words, is often people think that empathy must be the lack of boundaries, and that's a mistake. I can have empathy for you, and there's still a boundary. I love you, but as sure as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, this is how it will be. I have empathy, but this is the boundary.
Another darker side of empathy possibly could be if someone has empathy, in other words, puts themselves in someone else's shoes and comes at it from a unhealthy, obsessed way, instead of seeing what the other person needs that helps them best, they have the thought of, well, this is what they need because I've been there and I've experienced what they're experiencing and this is what needs to happen. And it's not effective. It's not as helpful.
Yeah, if you're a clinician, it's a mistake to provide treatment as if you're providing treatment to yourself instead of the person in front of you. Their life's not your life. And I do think that there's a lot of projection that goes on in therapy. And that's why I view therapy as a very technical thing. And we are here to be good technicians. As a parent, we're here to be good technicians as a parent. And it's not to respond to a child because of all that we've gone through. And it's not to try to repair through the child everything we've gone through. It's back to what is called for here, which tool. Is it a solution-based response, which is more sympathy? I'm sorry for the suffering, but step one, step two, step three, you got to do your homework. You got to get to bed. I'm sorry you're going to miss, you know, whatever, because you didn't do your homework, but now we got to get homework done. It's solution-based. Or empathy, which is a much more energy-consuming process because you're actually hitting the replay button on things you've been through. But that's only for one reason. That's only so that you can be effective in that moment with that person. It's not to deal with your stuff. Empathy is not treating your own stuff. It's experience, or, you know, replaying some of your stuff to better help you help the person in front of you.
I thought of something that may kind of go more along with the darker side of empathy. And I think that's when every time somebody shares something with us, we try to insert some of our own experience. So I think we have to be kind of sparing with when we're utilizing our own experience and make sure it's for the other person's benefit and not just, oh, well, they're talking about how they lost their grandma. Oh yeah, I lost my grandma 5 years ago. It was so difficult. And then you go into a story about how you felt when your grandmother was lost instead of focusing on what they're actually experiencing in that moment. I don't know if y'all have experienced that when you're trying to talk to somebody, share something that was difficult with them, and they just launch off into their own story.
A quick note on how to use, you know, everybody's living kind of a digital lifestyle these days. How do you have empathy in the digital age? And I think it works similar. Remember that the person on the other side of that digital communication is a person. You're not talking to a computer. A computer doesn't care. When I talk to Alexa, I'll ask Alexa when I'm working out to do math for me. I'll be doing a weight and I'll say, Alexa, what is 75% of, you know, whatever? And if she doesn't hear me, I get more terse. Alexa, 75% of 50. You think I could do that in my head, but she doesn't care how terse I was. People do. And people care online, people care through text messages. And so we can actually add some softening to how we respond to text messages. I'll leave that to you on how to do it, unless you guys have some ideas. I like to use emojis. I like to open with a greeting and end with a salutation. Hey, Bill. Hey, Debbie. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Debbie. And I know that sounds old fashioned, but we have given ourselves permission to become more terse in our electronic communication. And it's actually getting easier, though, to add some of that because you can speak it into your phone.
And on the other side of the screen, not making assumptions on what you think the other person is saying. So you might read something and be like, oh, well, they must be using sarcasm. Well, how would you know? There's no way for you to know. And unless you're actually talking to that person, let's not make assumptions and practice our empathy and try to think about, okay, now if I was putting myself in this person's shoes, what would it be that they were actually saying? And if I can't figure it out, which I probably can't because I can't mind read, I might give them a call or talk to them in person and be like, hey, what did you actually mean by that?
And how about some empathy in everyday life? What are some key steps that our viewers, our listeners can deploy immediately after this episode, early schedule them, plan them to get better at empathy? I think a lot of people, I mean, unless you're high on psychopathy, do okay with the sympathy thing. And I know men, that's one of the major complaints I get about men is every time I go to my significant other, my spouse, whatever, I just get this, do this, do this, do this. I get some game plan. And a lot of people don't want a game plan. They actually want you to commiserate with them. And there's value in that, as we spoke earlier. But what are some ways to do that? And I would say be intentional. And what does intention mean? Intention means being mindful of what you're doing in the moment. I'm going to have this conversation, your self-talk here, and I'm actually going to connect what they're sharing with me to an earlier experience of something I may have gone through that was just as close to being difficult or as difficult. You know, it's not a contest, but of what they're going through, and kind of put my mind in that historical place, hit the replay button on it so that I can be in the same psychological space or as close as possible with them. Go out there and try that this week. Try it with your spouse. Try it with those you care the most about. Try it with your kids. And a final note on kids, the best place to learn empathy is from you. So get better at it. So when they get older, they'll be good at it too. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team.